used to. Now there were thousands out there seeing what she saw, having access to her health data, hearing her voice, seeing her face. She was always visible through one or another of the campus sea change cameras, in addition to the one on her monitor. And so, when anything deviated from her normal buoyancy, people noticed. May? She wanted to hear it again, so she said nothing. May? It was a young woman's voice. A young woman's voice that sounded bright and fierce and capable of anything. May? It was a better, more indomitable version of herself. May? She felt stronger every time she heard it. She stayed at CE until 5, when she showed her watchers the newest clarification, the governor of Arizona, and enjoyed the surprise transparency of the governor's entire staff, something that many officials were doing to ensure to their constituents that deals were not being done, in darkness, outside the light of the clear leader. At the clarifying event, May met up with Renata and Denise and Josiah, these circlers who had once wielded some power over her and now were her acolytes. And afterward, they all had dinner in the glass eatery. There was little reason to leave campus for meals given that Bailey, hoping to engender more discussions and brain sharing and socialization among circlers, had instituted a new policy whereby all food would be not only free, as it always had been, but prepared daily by a different notable chef. The chefs were happy for the exposure, thousands of circlers smiling, zinging, posting photos, and the program was instantly and wildly popular, and the cafeterias were overflowing with people and, presumably, ideas. Among the bustle that night, May 8, feeling unsteady, Calden's words and cryptic messages still rattling in her head, she was glad, then, for the distractions of the night. The improv comedy battle was appropriately terrible and funny, despite its wall-to-wall incompetence. The Pakistan fundraiser was thoroughly inspiring. The event was able to amass 2.3 million smiles for the school. And finally, there was the barbecue, where May allowed herself a second glass of wine before settling into her dorm. The room had been hers for 6 weeks now. It no longer made sense to drive back to her apartment, which was expensive and, last time she'd been there, after being gone for 8 days, had mice. So she gave it up and became one of the 100 settlers, circlers who had moved onto campus permanently. The advantages were obvious, and the waiting list was now 1,209 names long. There was room on campus now for 288 circlers, and the company had just bought a nearby building, a former factory, planning to convert it into 500 more rooms. May's had been upgraded and now had fully smart appliances, wall screens and shades, everything centrally monitored. The room was cleaned daily and the refrigerator stocked with both her standard items, tracked via Homey, and products in beta. She could have anything she wanted, so long as she provided feedback to the manufacturers. She washed her face and brushed her teeth and settled into the cloud white bed. Transparency was optional after 10 p.m., and she usually went dark after her teeth brushing, which she found people interested in generally, and, she believed, might promote good dental health among her younger watchers. At 10:11 p.m., she said goodnight to her watchers. There were only 98,027 at that point, a few thousand of whom reciprocated her goodnight wishes, lifted her lens over her head, and placed it in its case. She was allowed to turn off the sea change cameras in the room, but she found she rarely did. She knew that the footage she might gather, herself, for instance, about movements during sleep, could be valuable someday, so she left the cameras on. It had taken a few weeks to get used to sleeping with her wrist monitors. She'd scratched her face one night and cracked her right screen another. But Circle engineers had improved the design, replacing the rigid screens with more flexible, unbreakable ones, and now she felt incomplete without them. She sat up in bed, knowing that it usually took her an hour or so to make her way to sleep. She turned on the wall screen, planning to check on her parents, but their sea change cameras were all dark. She sent them a zing, expecting no answer and getting none. She sent a message to Annie, but got no response. She paged through her zing feed, reading a few funny ones, and because she'd lost 6 pounds since going transparent, she spent 20 minutes looking for a new skirt and t-shirt, and somewhere in the 8th site she visited, she felt the tear opening up in her again. For no good reason, she checked to see if Mercer's site was still down, and found it was. She looked for any recent mention of him online or news of his whereabouts, and found none. The terror was growing within her, opening quickly, a fathomless blackness spreading under her. In her fridge, she had some of the sake Francis had introduced her to, so she got up, poured herself far too much, and drank it down. She went to the sea change portal and watched feeds from beaches in Sri Lanka and Brazil, feeling calmer, feeling warmer, and then remembered that a few thousand college kids calling themselves change seers had spread themselves all over the planet, installing cameras in the most remote regions. So for a time, she watched the view from a camera in a Namibian desert village, a pair of women preparing a meal, their children playing in the background. But after a few minutes watching, she found the tear opening wider, the underwater screams getting louder, an unbearable hiss. She looked again for Calden, spelling his name in new and irrational ways, scanning, for 45 minutes, the company directory by face, finding no one like him at all. She turned off the sea change cameras, poured more sake, drank it down, and got into bed. And thinking of Calden and his hands, his thin legs, his long fingers, she circled her nipples with her left hand, while, with her right, she moved her underwear to the side and simulated the movements of a tongue, of his tongue. It had no effect. But the sake was draining her mind of worry, and finally, at just before 12, she found something like sleep.
"Okay, everyone,"
May said. The morning was bright, and she was feeling chipper enough to try out a phrase she hoped might catch on circle-wide or beyond.
"This is a day like every other day, in that it is unlike any other day."
After she said it, May checked her wrist, but saw little sign it had struck a nerve. She was momentarily deflated, but the day itself, the unlimited promise it offered, buoyed her. It was 9:34 a.m. The sun was again bright and warm, and the campus was busy and abuzz. If the circlers needed any confirmation that they were in the middle of everything that mattered, the day had already brought it. Starting at 8:31, a series of helicopters had shaken the campus, bringing leaders from all the major health insurance companies, world health agencies, the Centers for Disease Control, and every significant pharmaceutical company. Finally, it was rumored, there would be complete information sharing among all these previously disconnected and even adversarial entities, and when they were coordinated, and once all the health data they'd collected was shared, most of this made possible through the circle, and more importantly, through you. Viruses could be stopped at their sources. Diseases would be tracked to their roots. All morning, May had watched these executives and doctors and officials stride happily through the grounds, heading for the just-built hippocampus. There, they'd have a day of meetings, private this time, with public forums promised in the future. And later, there would be a concert from some aging singer-songwriter only Bailey cared for, who had come in the night before for dinner with the wise men. Most important for May, though, was that one of the many morning helicopters contained Annie, who was finally coming home. She'd been gone for almost a month in Europe and China and Japan, ironing out some regulatory wrinkles, meeting with some of the transparent leaders there, the results of which seemed good, judging from the number of smiles Annie had posted on her Zing feed at the trip's conclusion. But more meaningful conversation between May and Annie had been difficult. Annie had congratulated her on her transparency, on her ascension, as Annie put it, but then had become very busy. Too busy to write notes of consequence, too busy to have phone calls she could be proud of, she'd said. They'd exchanged brief messages every day, but Annie's schedule had been, in her words, madcap, and the time difference meant they were rarely in sync and able to exchange anything profound. Annie had promised to arrive in the morning, direct from Beijing, and May was having trouble concentrating while waiting. She'd been watching the helicopters land, squinting high on the rooftops, looking for Annie's yellow head, to no avail. And now she had to spend an hour at the Protagorean Pavilion, a task she knew was important and normally would find fascinating, but today felt like an unbreachable wall between herself and her closest friend. On a granite panel outside the Protagorean Pavilion, the building's namesake was quoted loosely. "Humans are the measure of all things." "More important for our purposes," May said, opening the door, "is that now, with the tools available, humans can measure all things. Isn't that right, Terry?" In front of her stood a tall Korean-American man, Terry Min.
"Hello, May. Hello, May's watchers and followers."
"You cut your hair some new way," May said.
With Annie coming back, May was feeling loopy, goofy, and Terry was temporarily derailed. He hadn't counted on ad-libs.
Yeah, he said, running his fingers through it.
It's angular, May said.
Right, it is more angular. Should we go inside?
We should.
The designers of the building had taken pains to use organic shapes to soften the rigid math of the engineer's daily work. The atrium was encased in silver and seemed to undulate as if they stood at the bottom of an enormous corrugated tube.
What will we be seeing today, Terry?
I thought we'd start with a tour and then go a bit deeper with some stuff we're doing for the educational sector.
May followed Terry through the building, which was more of an engineer's lair than the parts of campus she'd become accustomed to visiting. The trick with her audience was to balance the mundane with the more glamorous parts of the circle. Both were necessary to reveal, and certainly thousands of viewers were more interested in the boiler rooms than the penthouses. But the calibration had to be precise. They passed Joseph and his teeth, and then said hello to various developers and engineers, each of whom turned to explain their work as best they could. May checked the time and saw there was a new notice from Dr. Villalobos. She asked May to come visit as soon as she could.
Nothing urgent, she said, but it should be today.
As they made their way through the building, May typed back to the doctor, saying she'd see her in 30 minutes.
Should we see the education project now?
I think that's a great idea, Terry said.
They walked through a curving hallway and into a great open space with at least 100 circlers working without division. It looked a bit like a mid-century stock market.
As your viewers might know, Terry said, the Department of Education has given us a nice grant. Wasn't it $3 billion?
May asked.
Well, who's counting? Terry said, abundantly satisfied with the number and what it demonstrated, which was that Washington knew the circle could measure anything, including student achievement, better than they ever hoped to.
But the point is that they asked us to design and implement a more effective wraparound data assessment system for the nation's students.
Oh, wait, this is cool, Terry said.
They stopped in front of a woman and a small child. He looked about 3 and was playing with a very shiny silver watch attached to his wrist.
Hi, Marie, Terry said to the woman. This is May, as you probably know.
I do know May,
Marie said in the slightest French accent.
And Michel here does too. Say hello, Michel.
Michel chose to wave.
Say something to Michel, May, Terry said.
How are you, Michel? May said.
Okay, now show her,
Terry said, nudging Michel's shoulder. On its tiny display, the watch on Michelle's wrist had registered the 4 words May had just said. Below these numbers was a counter, with the number 29,266 displayed.
Studies show that kids need to hear at least 30,000 words a day,
Marie explained.
So the watch does a very simple thing by recognizing, categorizing, and most crucially, counting those words. This is primarily for kids at home and before school age. Once they're there, we're assuming all this is tracked in the classroom.
That's a good segue, Terry said.
They thanked Marie and Michel and made their way down the hall to a large room decorated like a classroom, but rebooted with dozens of screens, ergonomic chairs, collaborative workspaces.
Oh, here's Jackie, Terry said.
Jackie, a sleek woman in her mid-30s, emerged and shook May's hand. She was wearing a sleeveless dress, highlighting her broad shoulders and mannequin arms. She had a small cast on her right wrist.
Hi, May. I'm so glad you could visit today.
Her voice was polished, professional, but with something flirtatious in it. She stood in front of the camera, her hands clasped before her.
So, Jackie, Terry said, clearly enjoying being near her, can you tell us a bit about what you're doing here?
May saw an alert on her wrist and interrupted.
Maybe first tell us where you came from before heading up this project. That's an interesting story.
Well, thank you for saying that, May. I don't know how interesting it is, but before joining the circle, I was in private equity, and before that, I was part of a group that started You Were a Swimmer,
May prompted.
You were in the Olympics.
Oh, that, Jackie said, throwing a hand in front of her smiling mouth.
You won a bronze medal in 2000?
I did.
Jackie's sudden shyness was endearing. May checked to confirm and saw the accumulation of a few thousand smiles.
And you had said internally that your experience as a world-class swimmer informed your plan here?
Yes, it did, May, Jackie said, now seeming to grasp where May was going with the dialogue.
There are so many things we could talk about here in the Protagorean Pavilion, but one interesting one for your viewers is what we're calling youth rank. Come over here for a second. Let's look at the big board.
She led May over to a wall screen, about 20 feet square.
We've been testing a system in Iowa for the last few months, and now that you're here, it seems a good time to demonstrate it. Maybe one of your viewers, if they're currently in high school in Iowa, would like to send you their name and school?
You heard the woman, May said. Anyone out there watching from Iowa and currently in high school?
May checked her wrist, where 11 zings came through. She showed them to Jackie, who nodded.
Okay, May said. So you just need her name?
Name and school, Jackie said.
May read one of the zings.
I have here Jennifer Batsuri, who says she attends Achievement Academy in Cedar Rapids.
Okay, Jackie said, turning back to the wall screen. Let's bring up Jennifer Batsuri from Achievement Academy.
The name appeared on the screen, with a school photo accompanying it. The photo revealed her to be an Indian-American girl of about 16, with braces and wearing a green and tan uniform. Beside her photo, two numerical counters were spinning, the numbers rising until they slowed and stopped, the upper figure at 1,396, the one below it at 179,827.
Well, well, congratulations, Jennifer, Jackie said, her eyes to the screen.
She turned to May. It seems we have a real achiever here from Achievement Academy. She's ranked 1,396 out of 179,827 high school students in Iowa.
May checked the time. She needed to speed Jackie's demonstration up.
And this is calculated. Jennifer's score is the result of comparing her test results, her class rank, her school's relative academic strength, and a number of other factors.
How's that look to you, Jennifer?
May asked. She checked her wrist, but Jennifer's feed was silent. There was a brief, awkward moment where May and Jackie expected Jennifer to return, expressing her joy, but she did not come back. May knew it was time to move on.
And can this be compared against all the other students in the country, and maybe even the world?
She asked.
That's the idea, Jackie said.
Just as within the circle we know our participation rank, for example, soon we'll be able to know at any given moment where our sons or daughters stand against the rest of American students, and then against the world students.
That sounds very helpful, May said, and would eliminate a lot of the doubt and stress out there.
Well, think of what this would do for a parent's understanding of their child's chances for college admission. There are about 12,000 spots for Ivy League freshmen every year. If your child is in the top 12,000 nationally, then you can imagine they'd have a good chance at one of those spots.
And it'll be updated how often?
Oh, daily. Once we get full participation from all schools and districts, we'll be able to keep daily rankings with every test, every pop quiz incorporated instantly. And, of course, these can be broken up between public and private, regional, and the rankings can be merged, weighted, and analyzed to see trends among various other factors, socioeconomic, race, ethnicity, everything.
A.G. dinged in May's ear. Ask about how it intersects with True Youth.
Jackie, I understand this overlaps in an interesting way with True Youth, formerly known as Child Track.
May got the sentence out just before a wave of nausea and sweat overtook her. She didn't want to see Francis. Maybe it wouldn't be Francis. There were other circlers on the project. She checked her wrist, thinking she might be able to quickly find him with circle search, but then there he was, striding toward her.
Here's Francis Garaventa,
Jackie said, oblivious to May's distress.
Who can talk about the intersection between youth rank and true youth, which I must say is at once revolutionary and necessary.
As Francis walked toward them, his hands coyly behind his back, May and Jackie both watched him, May feeling sweat pool in her armpits and also sensing that Jackie had a more than professional feeling for him. This was a different Francis. He was still shy, still slight, but his smile was confident, as if he'd been recently praised and expected more.
Hi, Francis.
Jackie said, shaking his hand with her unbroken one and turning her shoulder flirtatiously.
It was not apparent to the camera or to Francis, but to May,